From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
In the second week of this election campaign, the spin machines are in full operation. Spinning in campaigns has become a lot more complex in the modern era, with so many platforms and such a rapid pace of activity. Here today to pull the spin apart and discuss how effective or not the leaders have been in getting across their messages, we have Caroline Fisher. She's an assistant professor in communications and media at the University of Canberra. Caroline is an expert on spin. Once she practiced it as a press secretary to then Queensland Premier Anna Bligh. Now she brings an academic perspective to looking at it. Caroline Fisher, what images have the two leaders been trying to portray in these early days of the campaign, and are they being successful in casting themselves as they would like to be seen?
From the very start of the campaign, in fact, before the start of the campaign, they've been laying down the foundations of the types of images that they want to portray. And I think you see it very starkly in the first video that Scott Morrison put out, in fact, the day before he went to see the Governor-General, which tipped everybody off that, in fact, the election was coming. And you see him, you know, on the veranda of his house, in the garden, with his children wearing white. There's a lovely sentimental music in the background. He looks very gentle. He's speaking off the cuff to the camera, looking very sincere. And he's looking like a very relatable family man, and it's very calm and soft and considered. And so I think that, you know, the image there that they were trying to portray from the get-go is to try and counter some of this hard ad man kind of feel that he does have. And he can be come across as quite gruff, dismissive even, and certainly in the previous portfolios he's had in immigration, etc., he's had to take a fairly hard line, and that I think has been seen as quite unattractive by some people. So there's been a real attempt to soften him and put him as a family man. And then on the other hand is Bill Shorten, who has struggled in the, you know, preferred prime minister stakes. And we see in the Labor's first ad him sitting behind a desk, you know, contemporary cityscape, getting straight into Labor's policy, also showing him with his family, surrounded with his wife, walking in the sunshine with his kids, but very much sort of getting on with the job and I think the attempt to look prime ministerial. So the attempt to develop these, you know, quite different images, you can really see it on their Instagram accounts. And Instagram is an image-based platform. That's its sole purpose. And in campaigns, it's the platform that's used to show behind the scenes, to try and humanise. Each of the platforms have different purposes. And Instagram is very much about getting behind the person and having a peek into their personal lives. And it's very revealing. So Scott Morrison's, again, he's actually taken quite a sort of the contrived amateur kind of approach, where there's lots of selfies, him in the crowd, him with the public, lots of selfies. Not so well framed, not worried so much about composition, but him being out and about, certainly images with his family. And then we have Bill Shorten's Instagram account, and it's very different. Shorten's team, from what I understand, has employed an award-winning photographer, Andrew Mears, to work on his team. And it really shows. So the imagery on Shorten's Instagram account is so professional, to the point where I wonder if it actually isn't a bit distancing. We see Shorten in these very quite moving and intimate moments, reaching out to the sick or walking in the sun with his wife. Coffee table book moments, actually. They're so beautiful, the images, that they're almost otherworldly at times, and it's a very stark contrast to sort of the rough and ready personal selfies that are on ScoMo's page.
Do you think, therefore, there's an inherent contradiction between the focus on image and trying to come across as authentic?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, the focus on authenticity and image is inherently inauthentic. And so the harder you try to be authentic, the less authentic it becomes. Can I say, though, it seems to me that Scott Morrison does feel very comfortable in front of a camera. You know, he does seem quite easygoing. He's easy at being a bit of a larrikin. So I think that sort of authenticity, average everyday guy activity, comes to him possibly more easily than it appears to come to Bill Shorten. But yes, there is an absolute contrivance about the authenticity.
And how important do you think image is in a campaign? Because, for example, if you're someone with four houses that are negatively geared, you might feel much more strongly about the content of policy, or if you're a retiree worried about Labor's changing franking credit arrangements, then you worry too much about how they look in selfies.
Look, I think the thing about, you know, campaigns are made up of so many elements, but ultimately imagery and images are central. And, you know, the fact is the majority of Australians still get their news from the TV, and you can't have TV without pictures. So every day's events, those staged events, them out in the field digging carrots, whatever it is all about pictures for the TV news. It's forever been thus. It'll probably continue to be thus as long as we keep watching television. But not only that, also then now with social media. I mean, imagery is everything. You know, there's so many posts on people's feeds that unless it's an attractive image that engages you, you're not going to stop and look at it. So in fact, in that, you know, the fast paced scroll of a social media feed, that, you know, imagery is super important, and which is why they're paying so much attention to it.
Well, social media has obviously transformed campaigning in recent times, for better or worse.
It's neither one nor the other. I think, you know, there's an upside and a downside. I mean, the upside is that, you know, there really is much greater opportunity to participate and to involve the community and, I think, young people. And, you know, there's debate about, well, the level of involvement and is that real democratic participation, but that's a debate for another day. But on the downside, I think there's definitely a lack of transparency in campaigning via social media and also, you know, less scrutiny. So I think, you know, that's the downside.
The Easter weekend provided some sort of partial pause in campaigning, but both leaders used it for this soft campaigning you've been talking about, bringing out the wife and the kids. But what would people have made of Scott Morrison inviting the cameras in to see him singing and raising his arm and so on at the Horizon Church? That really seemed quite a different image, as it were.
Well, yes, I mean, you know, it's a very authentic image, clearly. I mean, he's taking authenticity to the hilt there. You can't doubt him for that.
Or the heavens.
Or the heavens, that's right. Look, personally, I think it's a risky strategy. Clearly, there's a strong Christian vote out there, and I think it would all have appealed to them. But, you know, the latest census, the 2016 census data shows that a third of Australians identify as having no religion, and there's millions of other Australians who aren't Christian. So some people may well have found it actually disquieting. You know, it's a risk, but I dare say he has taken that gamble. He's trying to be authentic. He wants people to know who he is, and he's certainly letting us have a good look. Some people might think it was a bit of oversharing, perhaps.
Now, just going to the role of wives, we've seen both Jenny Morrison and Chloe Shorten out on the campaign trail. How important is this, and are people taking any notice of the wives' appearance and participation?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, you'll probably find that a lot of the blah blah and the three-word slogans that are being put across in the news are less engaging, and they probably are looking at the wives and what the wives are wearing. And that's possibly more interesting to people than a lot of the spin, the lines that are coming out of the politicians' mouths.
I was thinking of appearance more in the sense of presence there. Being out there.
I think, you know, it is important, and certainly to try and present as a family man, you know, your wife's by your side and the kids also at times. I think that's absolutely essential. And I guess, again, you know, Jenny and Scott look like a good, healthy, happy suburban couple. And Chloe and Bill, I think, are trying to present a bit more of a prime ministerial couple. She's often dressed more formally and, you know, has had her hair done more formally and things like that. So they are definitely, I think, they come as a package, and I think that the presence of their wives is buttressing, I think, probably some of the negative attributes that the public perceive in both of the leaders.
So would you say that Julia Gillard lost out by having a less conventional domestic situation when she was on the campaign trail, or were people making different assessments there?
It's a really good question. I think there was a lot of debate about that. It was used against her by the opposite party, that, you know, that perhaps she didn't have much domestic experience, that there was no food in her cupboards, and therefore how could she relate to average families? So yes, look, I think that to a certain section of the community, of course, it won't be important at all, and in fact they'll be happy to see a proud, strong, independent, successful woman. But I think to a certain section of the community, yes, seeing them as a family man with their wife by their side will be an important signal.
We like to say campaigns are carefully controlled, but then you get a dead cat issue thrown in the form in this time of the controversy over a water buyback, sort of coming out of nowhere much, and you get a really out there interview by Barnaby Joyce, which I think will go down in journalism annals as a a teaching aid.
Indeed, I've made all my journalism students listen to it.
So what sort of effect do random things like that have in a campaign? How important is it to not have your campaign derailed?
Well, look, it is these things from left field that you have to plan for. You have to plan for the unexpected. And so there's only so much control that you have, and all campaign organisers know this, that ultimately you've got to be able to turn on the pin of a head during an election campaign. And when something goes your way, absolutely make the most of it, and that might be the opposition's misery. And, you know, you might have a whole bunch of things planned for the day, but if something blows up and your opposite number is suffering, well, then you might just cancel everything and keep the spotlight on them. You really just have to be very nimble to make the most of these random opportunities and to also minimise the damage of these random opportunities. It can go either way. I'm sure Labor's feeling today that, you know, Barnaby's the gift that keeps on giving. But, you know, Things may well come out of left field that will turn against them. The Adani protest hasn't helped Labor. So these things, swings and roundabouts for both sides.
And last week, of course, we had Bill Shorten with a slip about superannuation, saying he had no increases planned when in fact there were increases in the pipeline, which he obviously forgot or misunderstood the question or whatever. You do feel that that sort of mistake is worse these days than, say, several decades ago, when you wouldn't necessarily have pictures of him saying that, so it couldn't be played 50 times before breakfast, as it were.
Well, indeed. And their social media advisors, you know, pick it out, turn it into a meme, and off it goes. It goes viral. So, yes, that's right. There's very little room for accidents and opportunities that you think are positive. So, for instance, there's Labor with Bill Shorten out on a merry-go-round with his family having a nice day, and then the Liberal Party grabs it and turns the merry-go-round image, which was a positive, into a negative by turning it into a tax merry-go-round. So it's very unpredictable about how anything you plan is going to actually be used.
Now, these ads are very interesting that you raise, because, again, traditionally you've had a more formal advertising campaign planned months in advance, right? And now you're having, presumably that still exists, that long-term planning, but you're also having these really quick turnaround ones. How does that all work? How do advertising agencies get those two streams going, or are they two different teams doing those things?
Look, I imagine it's a bit of both. But the social media ads that you're seeing and the memes and those quick reaction, some of it might, you know, that'll come out of headquarters at a very quick turnaround. But those initial campaign ads, you know, the launch of, hi, this is Scott Morrison, this is who I am, this is my vision for the country, that would have been in the can well in advance, as was Labor's first campaign ad. Ready, shot, they'd decided what the campaign themes were, and everyone was just waiting for the election to be called. So this quick turnaround sort of meme ads and these short turnaround ads, I imagine that they're being managed in-house.
Of course, the wisdom has always been, at least from the hard heads in campaigns, that it's the negative ads that cut through, not the positive soft stuff. Do you think that's true?
Look, yes, the conventional wisdom is that that is the case, and they've come out with the negative campaigning terribly early. I mean, I remember speaking to you in the last podcast about reminding everybody that the last weekend of the campaign was likely to be negative. Well, I mean, bang, you know, they're out of the gates. A hybrid campaign, positive and negative on the same day. I mean, they're really firing both approaches from very early on.
Have you seen or observed anything of the independents campaigning?
To be honest, very little. I mean, clearly, the media's coverage so far has been terribly narrow and, I would say, boringly focused on the two leaders, really, at this point. If it wasn't for sort of the Greens and the Adani protest, etc., sort of infiltrating from the side and disrupting, it's the left-field moments or the unexpected moments which are sort of interrupting what is a very two-party, leader-based coverage. And, no, I think it's a problem that we're not hearing many diverse voices. There's been a bit about Clive Palmer, of course, that's cut through, which has been a bit interesting, and also some stories around Senator Anning. But on the whole, no, there's been very little about the independents.
And presumably they're locally focused, because the stronger independents are sort of community candidates, aren't they, and trying to weave their stories about local issues with some national overlay.
Yes, they are trying to do that. I mean, Clive Palmer, obviously, with his party, has got, you know, a national agenda, but all of his local candidates are very strongly campaigning, particularly on social media, with a lot of videos going out, also a lot of funny memes. So there's a strong campaign happening there. on social media channels, and he's got quite a big audience for these videos that he's making, particularly on YouTube and Facebook. And he says in one of them, in fact, I'm not going to get mainstream media coverage, and this is why I'm making these videos effectively. So, yeah, the main parties are dominating the mainstream media coverage, and which leaves the independents and smaller parties to make their own...
Although the independents, or a number of them, are running strongly on climate change, of course, which is a national theme, aren't they? Well, just finally on Clive Palmer, it's amazing. He says he'll spend $55 million for this campaign on advertising and so on, and is prepared indeed to spend more. So is that effective? Can he really buy a parliamentary voice for $55 million?
The proof will be in the pudding. I mean, his, you know, the latest news poll that's come out in those marginal seats. I mean, clearly some of the loss to the two major parties has gone to the United Australia Party. So there must be some traction there. He has got an audience. And like I say, some of the videos that he's produced on his policies, I mean, some of them have been viewed, you know, 250,000 times. So there is an audience, and he's getting his message out there. So I guess this is going to be a very interesting, you know, test case to see how many votes $55 million in advertising can actually buy.
Well, maybe he's more successful at buying votes than he is at then holding things together when he achieves his purpose.
Indeed.
On that note, Caroline Fisher, thank you very much for talking with us today. And that's all from our election podcast. We'll be back with another one soon. Thank you to my producer, Eliza Burlage. Goodbye for now.
And if you're itching for more election analysis, check out The Conversation's other podcast, Trust Me, I'm an Expert. You can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to Politics with Michelle Grattan right now. Our theme music is by Lee Rosevere. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.